Strangers and Aliens, Episode 83, Sci-Fi Casting Calls.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens, a podcast where we talk about God and talk about story and talk about God's story for our lives. And I am Ben Avery, one of three hosts who are with you today to talk about some fun, nerdy fanboy stuff. And I am joined by, let's start with Steve.
Steve McDonald.
And
Dr. Jace O'Neill.
And I want to encourage all of you listeners to go to Christian Geek Central, where you'll find the CGC Network, which we are a part of. It's a collection of blogs and podcasts working together to bring you the best content on the web for Christian geeks. That's ChristianGeekCentral.com. How are you doing, guys?
Good. How are you, man?
Haven't talked to you guys since, what was it, Sunday, when we were doing our draft for the Fantasy Football League that Dr. Jace put together.
Oh yeah. Fun times.
There are eight teams. Three of them are Strangers and Aliens teams. And yes. One of them is a friend of yours, right, Dr. Jace?
Yes, he's out in L.A. He's an actor out in L.A.
And
I didn't know we were allowed to have friends.
And then four of them are actually from the other side of the pond there, the podcasting pond from Sci-Fi Christian, and that would be Matt Anderson and Ben DeBono, and then Kobe and Daniel are also part of this.
It's basically a podcast throwdown between Strangers and Aliens and Sci-Fi Christian and a couple other things mixed in there.
Yeah, and definitely the battle lines there are easy to draw. Yeah. It's the three of us and your friend, and it's the four of them. Yeah. And then, of course, there is every man for himself, I'm also assuming.
It's definitely every man for himself.
So even if our side wins, one of them could come out on top, or the other way around.
Well, pretty much if one of us wins, that's great, but then we have bragging rights over them, but then whoever wins between us has bragging rights over everybody else.
So is this a dungeon crawl then, or how does this work? Because this is fantasy football. And I've been trying to figure out who my magic users are going to be. I'm thinking Peyton Manning is going to be my magic user. I have a character here named Rob Gronkowski. Yeah, I'm going to have him be an orc.
Ben.
And then there's Steven Ghostkowski, who is going to be a ghost.
A ghost.
Yeah. Ben, Robert Griffin. Cool. I don't know if we can play as griffins, but that'd be really good casting there, I think.
Are griffins player characters? Can you do that? Jace?
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. You need, if you're going to call him Gronkowski, just call him Gronk to sound cool.
Well, I'm thinking that's a perfect name for an orc.
So we did Gronk. So for those of you that are paying attention, we did an auction draft, and it was interesting to see who was voting for who. Like, for instance, I think one of the worst draft picks was Matt Anderson, who drafted, his name, by the way, is Midgard Manglers. I am the Virginia Beach Wolverines.
Yeah, wait until you're Steve's name for his team.
Yeah, Steve's name pretty much stole our name. His name is Strangers and Aliens.
Whoa.
Well, you know, to be fair, it's a grandfathered in from last year.
Okay. Yeah.
And,
all right.
You know, I was trying to represent for all of us because, you know, Jace was doing his thing. And I said, well, you know, I'll just throw this in there for all, you know. And Jace sort of has a little part in it. And, you know, just But no, now it's just grandfathered in. It feels awkward and strange.
And Ben's name is Capricorn Buccaneers, but one of the things that Matt Anderson, which I'm going to make fun of, he bid $14 on Percy Harvin, which Percy Harvin's out for the first half of the season. So $14.
Because he's injured.
So yeah. He must be that good. He must be worth $28.
He could have gotten Percy Harvin for a dollar if he had waited, because no one else was going to take him. And for $14, that was a bit much.
I have to admit, some of these people I bid on just because of their name. Robert Griffin, I wanted him because of his name, honestly. Gostkowski, the name.
I was wondering.
Gronk, the name.
Gronk.
I couldn't figure out a rhyme or reason, Ben, why you were bidding for some of the people you bid for.
No, literally, some of them were just, I needed to fill a position, and some of them were, that's a cool name. I thought, okay, my kicker, Steven Gostkowski. Gostkowski? I mean, that's someone from Monsters, Inc. right there. I did have a list in front of me that I kind of was following along to see who was, you know, good and who was not so good. I didn't really understand the list so much, but, and that's why I got Peyton Manning because of that list. And Drew Brees was on my list there as being
quarterbacks. There's no doubt. You have very good quarterbacks.
So.
Yeah, Ben does not know anything about football. So, well, you know what? So I will say, Ben, for someone who doesn't know much about football, you did pretty well. There's a couple things I think, you know, as we went further along, I would have done differently, but you could have done much worse.
Well, it is. I do understand football and how it's played, and I have to explain it to my kids when we watch it and stuff like that. I know about the game, but I have no idea about anything going on in professional football right now. And then fantasy football, adding into that, I have no idea what I was doing with that draft. And all of a sudden it started, and I'm like, wait a minute. We're supposed to be clicking and bidding, and it's like super fast eBay is what it was.
It's exactly what it's like.
I had completely forgotten what it was like. I thought it was more like draggy outy. So I was like telling Ben that it was going to be like 5 minutes between rounds. And instead, it's like 20 seconds. And I'm like,
Steve's like,
now I remember.
Someone can bid, and then it'll send the clock up to 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I can run out and get a sandwich, or I can. No, it's like the clock goes to 20 seconds, you know, just to give you time to. And I barely had time to even look at my list for some of these people to see if I really. Yeah. If I wanted this person or not.
This one actually went a lot shorter than a lot of them. Some of them take up to 5 to 8 hours, depending on how long you set, because every league is a little bit different. But I just want to let people know what the names of our teams are. You have the Virginia Beach Wolverines.
Because that's where Wolverines come from.
Well,
Virginia Beach.
I mean, that's Dr. Jace's hometown right now, and his home team. From growing up, right?
The Michigan Wolverines, but it's also doubled because we're sci-fi fantasy podcast Wolverines, like from X-Men.
Nice.
So, whereas Los Angeles Tigers, it doesn't really have it's LA, but then we have the Midgard Manglers.
Which is Matt Anderson from Sci-Fi Christian.
Yeah, we have Welcome to Level 7.
Which is Daniel Butcher from, Welcome to Level 7 podcast.
I guess Buffalo Destroyers.
That's
Destroyers.
Ben.
Yeah, so
that's
I guess.
Ben DeBono. What's Destroyers, I mean, that could go sports or fantasy, really.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Conan destroy a lot of buffaloes in one of his movies? I keep forgetting which one he.
And then yeah,
a lot
that
of
was
buffaloes,
the
Capricra, a lot of destruction.
And then we have
Capricorn Strange Buccaneers Alien. From Battlestar Galactica.
But the other one is the Big Tebowski, which is funny because he didn't even draft Tebow.
No, he laughed when Steve drafted him. Is what happened.
Well, that's right, because I thought the Big Tebowski would, like, you know, bid $2 and we'd all get a little laugh at it and let it go. But no, I got him for one.
$1. Like, all – it wasn't even a bidding auction. I mean, it was just – yeah, $1. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know that this – we'll be talking more or talking trash about our fantasy football teams. But, you know, we do have a big issue to talk about tonight.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And I will say this, Strangers and Aliens is not necessarily a news podcast. We don't necessarily talk about news as it happens because, you know, a year later, that news is gone. And if someone happens upon that episode, it's not going to be as relevant to them. But we do every once in a while talk about news, like the Star Wars news. We had to do an episode about that.
What's the Star Wars news?
that there's going to be another Star Wars movie.
What? No way!
Yeah, you did a podcast about it, Steve, with me. And so this news, we thought we needed to talk about this, but we're doing it in the context of a larger conversation. So yeah, we're going to be talking about news that'll be old, but there's a larger conversation here. So which one of you is going to break the news that everyone already knows? Who's listening?
Jace is, because he didn't get the role.
Matt Damon is going to play Robin.
Yeah, I heard he was going to play Aquaman.
Sorry.
So.
Thank you for playing, though.
Would be good casting, but it'd be Nightwing.
Yeah, no, it'd be horrible casting because he's too old for the role. But Ben Affleck is going to be playing the next Batman.
All right. So, Dr. Jace, what are your thoughts? What were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts was I wasn't surprised. Because of the rumors of Ben Affleck potentially directing Justice League, to me it wasn't a surprise because Ben Affleck has pretty much been clear that he'll direct in movies that he acts in, at least for the foreseeable future. So for me, it was an obvious play for Warner Brothers to make a money play to keep somebody who's a known quantity for them, who has done The Town and Argo, and who could potentially be a very good director for Justice League, or at least for the type of style of film that they're trying to potentially do in Justice League, since they're going this darker kind of feel for the movies. So I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised at all. As far as whether or not I think it's a good selection, it depends on the kind of story they tell.
Yeah.
Because people overblow things. Playing Batman is not that difficult when you're in a cape and you're covered up. All you have to do is learn how to growl. The hardest part is playing Bruce Wayne, and I think Ben Affleck can play a very good Bruce Wayne. In fact, he's a very, I mean, I can see that pretty, that seems like a pretty good casting just for Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. Steve, what were your initial thoughts?
I don't know. I figured they were going to do the whole, you know, go the whole route and do like Mini Driver as Batgirl, and you know, but they didn't. So I mean, he's the type of character, he's the type of actor that can take something and run with it and make it, you know, better than you thought it was going to be. You know, he's had some flops, and obviously, you know, his Daredevil and stuff like that. But you know, this isn't 10 years ago. You know,
and to be fair, Daredevil was not his fault. He actually was not that bad. The script and the direction was bad, but he himself in Daredevil was not the worst, had it been a good script and a good director.
Now, I would go one step back from that and say he was one of the problems with Daredevil.
Yeah.
There was a lot of problems that all built up into a bad movie.
I would disagree on that, but this is even from someone who has not been the biggest Ben Affleck fan. I mean, I liked him in Good Will Hunting more because of the story than anything, but I think he has improved as an actor as time has gone on. He's become a more nuanced actor. Maybe that's because he's actually directing and can control the story. When I see Daredevil, there are some issues with it, and I can see why people would blame him for the acting, but the truth is, and again, I'm approaching it from an acting perspective. When the script is bad and the direction's bad, people look like they're acting bad. And in that particular situation, I really don't think it was him. And I'm not the hugest Ben Affleck fan back then. I think he's better now. But I really think most of the issues was direction and writing for that movie.
I won't disagree with you that there were serious problems with the direction and writing.
Yeah.
With Good Will Hunting and Ben Affleck, that's why I like him in the first place. It's been a long, long time since I've seen that movie, but that I really enjoyed him in that movie, and I was actually kind of disappointed there wasn't more of him in the movie because it really was more Matt Damon's movie. And I don't know if that's because he's a Ben, you know, and I just want Ben to get their due, but
nice.
You know, the whole thing with Daredevil, There's lots that could be said possibly about that, but that was 10 years ago. I'm looking at Hollywoodland, which he turned in a super performance with that. It was nuanced. It was dark, but he was able to carry off, you know, playing George. It's George Reeves, right?
Yeah.
It's Christopher Reeve, George Reeves.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was able to pull off.
Just to correct you, it was actually 16 years ago, Good Will Hunting.
No, but Daredevil was 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying Good Will Hunting.
Hey, speaking of correcting, I would like everyone to go and watch the opening credits to the Superman cartoons.
Oh, my gosh.
If he is not flying, I will eat my hat, man. Not that I really have a hat to eat, but...
all right, so go back to what you were saying.
So back to Hollywoodland. In Hollywoodland, he is playing George Reeves, who is playing Superman. And it's dark, but it's also, he does play, you know, the happy times, and he does, I mean, it's a nuanced performance. It's good. And Argo is where I look and see, okay, I can see him.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't give anything away.
I won't spoil it. Although it is based on historical events that might spoil it for you. But
yeah.
In Argo, he is playing a character that I'm thinking, okay, there's Bruce Wayne right there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they want him as Bruce Wayne. So,
I personally think they want him for more than that. I think they want him for his star power and for his, because he is, whether you like him or not, he is a player in Hollywood. It's kind of like George Clooney. There are certain people that are beyond, they become almost like a brand in and of themselves. And now the fact that he also is a very talented director.
And again, Argo. I mean, I really enjoyed that movie. And I think that there is a directing thing involved in his contract.
Yeah, I agree.
He's directing something. It might not be Justice League, but he's got something that he's going to get to direct that probably he's wanted to do. Something like that. Maybe a Batman movie.
He's the next to direct the next Batman trilogy. Maybe that's it.
I mean, there's got to be something more to it than that. Because he could write whatever. I mean, he could do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And this is what he's choosing to do. So, I mean, this is not just him cashing in a paycheck, I don't think. Maybe it could be, but... okay, so what do we think then? What are we looking at this? Do you have any predictions about the direction for the character of Batman?
Well, I think it's fairly obvious from what the announcements are that they want Batman to be older than Superman, to play kind of that... that mentor slash a little bit older kind of edginess to him. But, you know, I think it's really hard to say, other than the fact that, to me, casting Ben is a hint towards direction. And you kind of get a feel for his direction. He's a little bit – he's a more of a gritty type director. And so that's where I think it's heading. I think that's the next Batman stage. I can't imagine that they would just want Batman for this and then Batman for Justice League and that's it. You know, I think that Batman's the biggest money-making DC has right now. And Warner Brothers wants to keep their franchises alive. So I think that we'll probably see a Batman movie sometime in the not-too-distant future.
Well, and it might be this movie. I mean, this is the crazy thing. This is the sequel to Man of Steel. Some news items have even said Man of Steel 2.
Yeah.
And
well, it's probably just shorthand.
It is shorthand because there's no title yet.
I think it's the type of thing where they've already established Batman in the last, you know, unless it's an animated thing. If you see a live Batman, it's dark, it's gritty. So, you know, even, I mean, especially coming from the Frank Miller, the core text here. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but you know, it's a gritty, it's a dark comic book. So, you know, if you have that as the base for your movie, and you have what they've laid out in the last 10 years for Batman and live performances, then you know obviously it's going to be dark, it's going to be gritty, and it's probably just going to cast him in a whole new light. You know, it's almost like an antagonist instead of a protagonist.
Yeah, I think there'll be some antagonism involved there. I also think this is a very, very big step away from Christian Bale, which is something I was expecting. I mean, they were going to have to really divorce us from the idea of Christian Bale as Batman because he's so large. It's like Christopher Reeve in a lot of ways.
But if you think about it, if you're trying to find someone who has the name power in Hollywood that also could play Batman. There's very few people that could match name power with Christian Bale. Very, very, very few. And
really?
Well, yeah. Christian Bale now.
Yeah, Christian Bale now, of course.
When he was cast, it wasn't, but...
I just don't see him as, like, one of the hugest actors.
Well, he's one of the biggest leading men right now. I mean, he's sought after hugely.
Okay. You would know better than I.
Yeah, he's one of the top... I mean, it's just like whenever... Like Robert Downey Jr., when you are headlining one of the bigger franchises, you become... Not only that, but Christian Bale's a very talented actor as well. He's had a long career since he was a kid. But he is one of the leading men right now. Christopher Nolan, you know, his relationship with them. And as long as he keeps making good movies, he'll continue to be probably for a little while.
Okay.
So I believe you. My big hope is...
He's playing Moses. Christian Bale's playing Moses. So... They got he's taken Charlton Heston's shoes.
In what venue?
Exodus.
That's the Steven Spielberg one, right? Or Steven Spielberg doing a Noah? I think it is Steven Spielberg.
Doing Noah or doing
Moses? Darren Aronofsky is doing Noah, and Steven Spielberg is doing Moses.
Are they doing it as if it was like, you know, they are doing it straight up, or is this like a...
The stuff I've seen about Noah, no,
I don't know.
No.
I mean, is it going to be like that TV Noah's climbing on the ark and stuff?
Noah's gone back and forth. They originally said it wasn't going to stay true to the text, and then they said that they changed their mind and they are going to stay true to the text.
Oh, because my last reading of the... there was not a script, but a plot synopsis that had gone out, and it seemed there was some crazy stuff going on in there.
Oh, and also, this is not... Exodus is not Steven Spielberg. It's Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott. What is Steven Spielberg is doing a biblical thing too?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
Maybe somebody was at one point. Mel Gibson was attached to do like the Maccabees or something.
That was long ago. I really wanted to see that movie happen too.
Yeah,
that'd have been awesome.
Yeah.
The Prayer of Jabez, the movie.
That would also be an awesome.
Yeah.
Let's take one tiny verse and extrapolate a 2-hour movie from it.
No.
I think we don't want to go on that rabbit trail right now. No. But what I was going to say is I really hope that, and I think Ben Affleck fits this mold, that they do go kind of the world's greatest detective route with the character and have his Bruce Wayne be a engaged businessman who, not engaged in the sense of, you know, going to get married to someone, but engaged actually in the business he's doing. Right. And, you know, he's on the board because he's a part of the board and making decisions and having, you know, engagement there. And that puts him in contact with maybe like a Lex Luthor type of thing. But then to have Batman and to have him working as a detective behind the scenes, in the shadows, and actually piecing things together. You know, we talked a whole long at length about what kind of movie Batman versus Superman will be and what kind of conflict there might be with them. I definitely think that Ben Affleck, he would fit that, can fit that. If the material fits him, and I want to trust this is not stunt casting. I want to trust that they are saying this is the movie we're writing and this is the guy who can do the part that we are envisioning.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then I'm optimistic about this movie.
Yeah, it all depends on the direction that they're taking. I mean, I've seen pictures of people, you know, this creative art of putting him in the bat suit, and he looks the part in the suit. I don't think that's the problem. I mean, it's the other parts. It's the Bruce Wayne parts.
Yeah, yeah. Someone I know, I can't remember who it was, but they took a picture of his Daredevil and cropped it so you can't see the top of the cowl and then recolored it so it looks like it's Batman's cowl. And yeah. it looks right. It works. It works.
Yeah.
So, cool. Anything further about Ben Affleck?
No. I mean, I don't think it's something you'll really know. I know people are really upset about it because they have all these other, you know, people are like, no, you should have gotten Josh Brolin. Well, you know.
He would have been good, too. I could see him working.
He would have been good. But with Ben, you get, if they're going in the direction of a director, with Ben, you get a known quantity as a director. And to me, I would take Ben Affleck as a director actor than Josh Brolin as just as an actor, because Ben Affleck's a pretty good director. And they need somebody. They need someone. They can't. They don't have to just replace Christian Bale. They have to replace Christopher Nolan. And as far as directing chops, you know, he's not done anything as big as Batman. But if he can translate what he does in a smaller film setting to Batman, then it will be a very good story, I think.
But why do you think they didn't just go with what's his name, Gordon Levitt?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
To divorce us from the Dark Knight trilogy. It's to make a clean break, I think.
But why do you need the clean break?
Because it's a different storyline. This is not the same story. They're not telling the same story.
Right, but you could at least just have that little extra, you know, oh, and by the way, look, now that our cool trilogy is crossed over with our other cool, you know, duology or trilogy.
Yeah, but I think that they want to do a Bruce Wayne story, not an orphan cop who has, you know, an orphanage now in a mansion.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't be surprised if they do a Nightwing movie, but with him in it. But you can't tell in film this close back, you'd have to go in a different direction. You can't just cast him, even though he was in the last film, because you have to break free from the Nolan universe.
It would have worked maybe if they were going to actually tie in Justice League to the Nolan verse.
Yeah.
But I think that they're actually trying to tell, and I really hope they do this. Again, I mean, this is a Bruce Wayne Batman thing, and I'm hoping that means we also see a lot more of Clark Kent and Superman, and get to see Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent play off each other, and get to see Superman and Batman play off each other. And, you know, Lex Luthor is kind of in between all of them, you know, connected to all four of those characters.
Speaking of casting, I know one of the rumors for Lex Luthor is one of your guys.
Yes, I'm still hearing it. I hope it happens.
Yeah, but I'm also hearing that it's not going to happen.
What I've heard, and this makes sense if it's true. If it's not true, then, you know, it's, again, casting rumors. But if Bryan Cranston is going to be Lex Luthor, I've heard that they're waiting until the final episode of Breaking Bad, because we're in the last season. So the final episode is the finale, not just the final episode of the season. And they're waiting for that. And so when you have that hit and you have all of the publicity because of that, then they jump in and ride that wave of publicity and say, guess what? He's going to be Lex Luthor. And I would love to see him be Lex Luthor. Again, I'm not very good at casting myself because I don't know actors by name well enough to do it. But he's one that I would love to see in the role.
He is talented enough to pull off the role.
Oh, yeah.
He's been, I mean, even in, like I said, my first introduction to him that I remember was Malcolm in the Middle. And it's such a goofy show. But even in that goofy show, I'm sitting there going, you know what? He is a talented actor. I mean, in fact, at first it was all about the mom, but he was such an interesting character that he really pulls his own. But anyway.
Okay, well, can I give you one more connection, though, for Bryan Cranston? And that is Argo. He is in Argo. So he has worked with Ben Affleck, knows Ben Affleck, and I think that, you know, he's second build, it looks like. But he was fantastic in that, too. I mean, the guy, he's a talent.
He's a very talented actor.
Okay, so there's some other casting rumors that we are just going to mention right now because we are talking about casting and stuff. Dr. Jace, I would like to talk about some Star Wars things that I have heard. Would you like to take off your headphones?
Or now, is this just casting rumors?
Casting rumors, but they're spoilers as well.
They tell you what's going to happen.
They do give away, if they're true. Now, these are rumors, but if it's true, it does give away some stuff about the story.
Well, what I've heard, and you tell me if it's
okay.
If it's something different, I've heard that it's going to focus in on Leia's and Han Solo's kids.
Yes, and that, you know, and Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, they're all in, from what I've heard. Now, this is something completely different, though. So,
okay. It ruins the story, or
it doesn't ruin the story, but it gives away an element of the story if it's true.
Well, I don't care about that. Go ahead. You can share that.
Okay. There has been talk that they have talked to Ewan McGregor about doing something in the next movie, the next Star Wars movie, and the guy who played Emperor Palpatine coming in.
I would expect that makes.
Now they'll probably be, you know, blue ghosts, or or in Palpatine's turn, maybe a red ghost. I don't know, but
it would be nice if they just had like an homage character to those characters. So you see a familiar face, and it instantly recalls that good stuff, or you know, the bad stuff. And so, you know, it's an easy shorthand. It's like, you know, or there's the guy that played Emperor Palpatine. He must be the bad guy, or you know, something like that. Just to shorthand it.
Well, I don't know if they would do that. I think that they might. I mean, because they're both Jedi or Sith and using the Force, they could be an element of the story as the character. But what I heard, though, is that this is Ewan McGregor going in and asking about a solo Obi-Wan movie, you know, from like between trilogies or something like that.
Yeah.
And coming out of that, there was talk that they might be bringing him back as a blue space ghost.
Yeah.
To maybe guide the Skywalker children along. So the other thing that just came out today is James Spader is Ultron in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, what a role to have. He doesn't have to get dressed up. He can just do the voiceovers.
Yeah.
And people are talking about also Vin Diesel as Groot, the tree monster, tree alien from Guardians of the Galaxy,
his voice sounds like a tree.
Doesn't it, though? I mean, my introduction to Vin Diesel was Iron Giant.
Yeah.
And he is amazing as the robot. I mean, he's both robotic and sympathetic. At the same time, you really cared, especially that last moment of the movie.
Yeah.
He says his last line, I'm just like, oh. You know, it's almost tear-drinking, almost.
Can you guys think, because right now people are, to me, those are low risk, because those are just voices, and they make sense to me. I can get it. But obviously, people are up in arms about the Affleck casting. You know, sometimes there's been in the past where people have been cast and people are like, they get upset about it, but it ends up being good. Can you guys think of a few? I mean, I can tell you right off the bat, there's one that I think is a really good example.
That people were upset about and that ended up being good?
Yeah. Heath Ledger, when it comes to the Joker, people were upset initially. They were livid, in fact, that how could you cast the guy from A Knight's Tale to supersede, to take over for Jack Nicholas. Or Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson, the golfer?
Yeah. I always do that. Nicholas and Nicholson, I have always messed up since I was a kid.
Jack Nickelback, I think is.
And the truth is that when I heard that Heath Ledger was cast, I actually thought that's a really smart casting, because Heath Ledger's a pretty good actor. And so, to me, it wasn't a surprise, and I was actually excited that they're going in a different direction, but the majority of the people were really upset. Can you think of other examples where there was casting and then people were completely upset, but it ended up being good?
Yeah, I can think of a few, and this is our topic of discussion then here, where we're talking about casting that was surprisingly good and then casting that was just plain miscast and not surprisingly bad, because we just knew it would be. And yeah, Heath Ledger as Joker. One that I thought of was actually Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
Yeah,
I remember.
Way too tall.
Yeah, seeing pictures of him being like, that does not look like my impression of Wolverine. It does not look like the artistic interpretation of Wolverine that you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
He's tall. He's towering. He's not feral, you know. But then, man, did he nail it?
Yeah.
And I feel bad for that casting, because someone else was cast in that role and had to back out because they were in Mission Impossible 2, the bad guy. So you always wonder what I think about that, because the guy who was originally Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, he also got yanked, you know, with 1 or 2 days into filming, and I feel bad about those guys.
Yeah, it happens. I I was surprised actually to see how often it's happened. Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager. They filmed 3 days with her, 2 days with her, something like that, and hired and dropped her. It was a Bijol, I can't remember her last name.
Yeah,
but she was a French actress, and there's actually some clips of her on the bridge of Voyager, giving orders to the crew. It's just weird because you're so used to Kate Mulgrew. So,
wow.
Another one I thought of was Chris Evans as Captain America, because, and not because he had already played a superhero, but because the only things I'd seen him do
was a smart aleck.
Yeah. Was that Johnny Storm type of character. Mm-hmm. And I was worried about Captain America because I wanted my Captain America to be, you know, an ideal. I wanted him to be a good character showing, you know, someone who's optimistic, someone who is sacrificing, and someone who is not a joke.
And yeah.
Or another one I would add in there in that same universe is Mark Ruffalo.
As the Hulk, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say he was a surprise to me, though. I look at him and I'm just like, good. They got rid of... Edward Norton. Because like, I don't know anything about him at the time.
Yeah, well, I've known his career, so when they cast him in there, I'm like, what? Really? But it works. It works. I mean, obviously, Edward Norton is not a large statured man either, but he has a lot of really good acting chops. So I was really surprised by the Ruffalo casting, but he ended up doing a pretty good job. It's not like, you know, there's certain people, when they cast Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, I'm like, well, he is Tony Stark. I mean, he makes complete sense.
Yeah.
When you see Christopher Reeve as Superman, he looks like Superman.
With Edward Norton, he was a logical choice because of Fight Club. And so when I found out, oh, Edward Norton, well, Fight Club, I can totally see what they're going for there. And it was just, yeah. He did the same thing, almost.
Yeah. I would say another one, a surprising casting that ended up being good, was Michael Keaton for the Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because they're like, Mr. Mom?
Yeah.
You're casting Mr. Mom as Batman?
Mm-hmm.
But again, the reason it worked is because he's a very good actor. And he... you throw in a little bit of that little craziness that he shows and that little distant playboy, and you're like, you know what? He's actually a pretty good Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, you take his manic energy and redirect it.
Yeah.
So it's much for the comedy, but for the darkness.
And what really helped was a couple of months before Batman came out, he was in, I forget the name of the movie, but it was, you know, a movie about someone, you know, getting straight after being a drunk. And it was a straight
movie. Was it called
movie.
Something like Getting Straight or something like that?
Might have been something like that. I'm not sure. But it was just, you know, a complete turnaround for his acting career. And it's a little-known movie. But I think without that movie, there would have been a lot of people who didn't go see Dark Knight or, you know, Batman. He wasn't in Dark Knight.
The other thing with him, though, is I wonder if some people expected more of an Adam West type of Batman movie because they cast a comedian in the role of Batman, or not a comedian, but a comic actor.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's
He's done some stuff. Well, of course, I don't think people knew Tim Burton as well then. If they would have known Tim Burton, they would have known, because, you know, he was basically known for Beetlejuice up until that point.
Yeah.
That was his big, big film.
And that was a big film for Michael Keaton too.
Well, that's what I mean. Michael Keaton was really known for Beetlejuice. So for Beetlejuice to be playing Batman was a catch 22. And for me, Joker, that Joker, because that was what, 89? Was that 89?
Yeah, yep.
To me, and we've talked about this in the past, first of all, Jack is a great Joker. The problem is he's not a physical threat. So to me, when that's why I was really excited as Joker, as Heath Ledger. He's a guy who can hold his own. Plus, he's a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Let's see, any other surprise casting?
Well, I guess. I'm ready to. I'm loaded up for the castings that were awful, that did not work out.
All right, I have a couple more that aren't then.
Okay.
And one being Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there were a lot of people who were complaining about that. But after the movie, there were a lot of complaints about Daredevil, but he was not one of them.
No, he was good. How many guys can you cast to play Kingpin with that kind of size and who has that kind of acting chops?
And, yeah, that presence. I mean, it's a physical presence, but it's also, psychic is the right word, but it's a physical presence, and it's just, you know, when he's in the room, it's not just his physicality. It's his personality as well.
It's very rare for a big guy like that to actually be a very talented actor. And if you've ever seen The Green Mile, where he plays John Coffey, he's a very good actor. And a lot of the roles he plays they don't necessarily show off that because he's usually playing a brute. But Kingpin, he was Kingpin for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was sad when I heard that when he passed away. I was really sad about that.
Yeah.
Another surprise for me, the new Star Trek cast. They all nailed it, and I was surprised how well everything worked. Except for maybe Uhura. She was not so much the same Uhura as before, but the cast worked, and really worked well as far as an ensemble goes.
I think a lot of people see her as like the Uhura that could have been. You know, Nichelle Nichols showed little glimpses and glimmers of, you know, what the character and what Uhura was really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they did is they took that and said, you know what, we're going to shine that a little bit. We're going to tweak it a little bit and really pull it out. And, you know, if she had been able to, overcome the skimpy miniskirt, I think it would have been a little different show. 'Cause you would have had, you know, the three, and then you would have had this, very strong woman, who in the original series wasn't connected to any individual.
Yeah.
Now,
the thing that gives me a connective tissue between the original series Uhura and the new movie Uhura is honestly Star Trek III. And the way that Nichelle Nichols plays Uhura there, that's mm-hmm. where you can really see kind of a springboard into the way that Uhura is in the new movies.
Right.
You know,
did you have some other casting positives?
I had one more that I don't think anyone's going to agree with me about. That's Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, an Amazing Spider-Man.
That you liked or didn't like?
I liked. I was surprised. He's British, and he's tall, and he's not young. but I feel like he did a pretty good job. I mean, I think he's one of the best things about that movie.
Well, I think he looks like he's 40 years old
but
playing Spider-Man.
Well, he might, but he pulled it off, I think. So,
yeah.
All right.
Definitely, in my opinion, Tobey Maguire is a much better Spider-Man. But
and another surprise cast, I think. I didn't expect him to do as well as he did.
Yeah.
In the role, and he really embodied it.
Yeah, he did a very good job, I thought. Well, so okay, casting ones. I mean, I've got my top three. I'd be surprised if they're not in your guys'. Well, one of them might not be in your list, but I think two of the three probably would be in your top 10 if you named them. Worst castings ever for superheroes.
All right, let's hear them.
All right. These are in no particular order, but number one is Arnold, Mr. Freeze, Batman, yes. And Robin.
Yeah, that would be in my top.
And that the reason why is because I was so excited that they were going to cast Patrick Stewart to play Mr. Freeze. And to me, Patrick Stewart, he would be a great, I mean, he's like Locutus from the Borg. I mean, he would be a great Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, he would have been fantastic.
In fact, I was kind of hoping that Nolan would do a Mr. Freeze and not like Supernatural Freeze, but he's heartless and will do anything. I think Patrick Stewart would be a tremendous character for that. So he's my top three worst casting.
You take Patrick Stewart out of the picture, Arnold is still there as a really bad casting choice.
Awful.
Yeah.
Now, I would expand that one way, though, Dr. Jace. I would say almost the entire cast of Batman and Robin was miscast. And I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's George Clooney.
Yeah.
That's,
real bad.
Oh, Chris O'Donnell, who wasn't Alicia, too bad, but, and then Alicia Silverstone, who was, yeah. She was cast because she was one of the hot items on, you know, in Hollywood. Time, yeah. And
Uma Thurman.
She probably is not so bad of a miscast there.
No. She did a good job, but yeah. I think that, first of all, Chris O'Donnell, I had a hard time with him just because.
Well, in this movie, he's old.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. He was okay in the previous one, but you get into this one and it's, whoa. We're talking for 3-4 years later.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, George Clooney, it's hard for me to know if it was really him or the direction and script. Is it possible that George Clooney, because he could play a good Bruce Wayne, I think, but if it was a very good script and a director, would it have been as bad? I mean, come on. He had the bat nipples on the suit. I mean, who could pull that off?
Yeah, I'd like to pull them off because it would make the suit a much better suit. But
it was awful. It was awful.
I still contend that Batman and Robin is meant to be seen as a big screen Adam West Batman movie, and you're not going to put George Clooney in Adam West's tights.
Yeah. I think that's what you got with Batman Forever, and I think Batman Forever was done much better. I mean, some people didn't like it because it wasn't Burton's, but it was still much better than Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin is Adam West, but poorly done.
Oh, but I see Batman Forever done as more of a straight family adventure kind of movie. Where
it's the same director.
I know.
He did it to be a comic book. I mean, that's what he said with Batman Forever. He wanted to go back to the Adam West roots, but update it. So that was Batman Forever. Batman and Robin was, I mean,
it was a mess.
It was just bad. It was a train wreck.
It was. And I liked watching the commentary and extras on that because some of them, they're almost apologizing.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for this movie that it's in your Batman collection. And but okay, so wow. Getting off of Batman and Robin then. Steve, you have anything to add here? Any miscasts that you can think of?
I can think of like really lousy movies with people who should have made them a little bit better, but just didn't. I mean, Halle Berry is not a bad actress, but Catwoman.
Okay. Yeah. That was one of my top three.
Okay.
You know, Liam Neeson is not a bad actor, but you know, you put him in, what was it? Darkman.
Are you serious?
No. Darkman is perfect.
Darkman. He is like the perfect Darkman.
It is perfect. Because it is exactly what it means to be.
Horrible?
Steve, I just did a running tally on Twitter. Someone asked the top three best comic book casts, and Liam Neeson gets one of the top vote getters. If you're talking about vote getters for best cast in comics, they usually come down to Christian Bale and Batman, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, and one of the top five was Liam Neeson for Dark Man.
No, that'd be wrong.
I think that comes down to you just not liking the movie then, because Darkman is exactly what it's meant to be. It is exactly what it's meant to be. And that's kind of a take on the superhero concept and, you know, do it as a B movie and give it some good, you know, well, average special effects. And then you throw this guy who can actually act into the suit and... Yeah, I would have to heartily disagree with you on this one.
Wow.
Yeah, I would too. I would definitely disagree with you. I would agree with you on Halle Berry and Catwoman, but that whole thing was a train wreck. But it was really, I mean, she did a bad job. I mean, just downright. Now it's possible, just like my argument for some of the others that for Ben Affleck, that writing and direction could have changed it because she is a good actress.
I don't think we can do that for her in this movie, though, because she was very, very much involved.
I know she was. Yeah.
And I think that you can possibly put some of the blame on producing and directing and writing, but some of that falls squarely on her shoulders.
Well, her decisions, for sure. But I would imagine if you had a dynamic script and a dynamic director, we wouldn't be talking about her as a top three worst casting choices of all time.
No, we might even be talking about the sequel.
But I have a third one.
All right, let's hear it.
One that you guys probably, it's comic bookish. I don't think you guys would, but it would be Raul Julia for General M. Bison for Street Fighter.
But, Street. That's a little obtuse.
No. Street Fighter, that's because it's not your generation. Street Fighter was the video game when I was growing up. It was Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. So you knew General Bison. You knew it. I mean, he was the bad guy of all bad guys. And then
General
all of a sudden.
Bison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he a Buffalo Destroyer?
No. Okay, Google a picture of General Bison right now.
No. No, do it. You'll recognize it when you see him.
No, Google him right now and look at the cartoons, not with Raul Julia, but look at the cartoons of what he looks like. All right, and then look at the pictures of Raul Julia. I'm sitting there going, you're telling me the father of the Addams Family is General Bison?
Yeah, he has no evil presence in that movie at all. But again, that's kind of the type of movie they're making with this. I mean, you've got Jean-Claude Van Damme as the whoever that main Street Fighter character is.
I
think his name is Guile. Street Fighter.
His name is
Guile. Yeah, and I mean, there's just movie is a mess. That whole movie is a mess.
Just clarify again what you just said. Jean-Claude Van Damme, one of the biggest guys of the '80s, as far as like fighters. And his main bad guy is Raul Julia?
Yeah, it's a horrid, horrid movie. And the sad thing is the sequel's even worse. It's awful.
Yeah, so for me, top three worst casting decision of a comic book, you know, fantasy superhero type show, awful.
Okay.
I have one more.
I have two more.
Kathy Lee Crosby as Wonder Woman. I like Kathy Lee Crosby. I watched That's Incredible, you know, at length in the 80s.
Yeah.
This is the 1974 TV movie of Wonder Woman, and for some reason they cast a blonde woman.
Well, but wasn't she more like a super spy type of thing?
She was supposed to be Wonder Woman.
No, but she was Wonder Woman. It was more the super spy kind rather than, you know, from the island of... I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was definitely a different take.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Different suit, different... I mean, picture, you know, Linda Carter, and that's not what Kathy Lee Crosby is wearing. At all. It's like a jumpsuit.
It is, yeah.
It looks more like a flight attendant suit.
Yeah, it's like a flight attendant suit and a trapeze artist, and mix it together, and that's what you get.
Wow. So,
she could have been on, Under the Big Top with the stars of NBC in that outfit.
Or basically, if it was black and white, she could have been in Lost in Space.
Well. You need a little more tinfoil on there.
What's your other two?
Well, they're both easy targets, and that's why I almost feel bad about it. But and these are ones that the Nerd Rage... Well, one of them, this one I'm going to say right now, the Nerd Rage was totally justified. And that's Keanu Reeves as John Constantine. And
it was just a bad movie, too.
Yeah, but he does not fit the character at all. He was cast for one reason and one reason only... He was Keanu Reeves from The Matrix. And so we're going to put him in a movie and kind of rejigger it a little bit so that the concept works with the idea of some sort of Matrix kind of thing. So we can do slow-mo shooting and all that kind of... It's just not good. And the other one, I shouldn't even bring it up. I don't know if there was really much Nerd Rage, but it was a terrible miscast, and that is Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. Which one?
Take your pick. take A, take B. I actually feel like Hayden Christensen is a very good actor. I've seen him in I think it's maybe one other movie, and I thought he did a fantastic job in, I think it's Shattered Glass is what it was called. He did a fantastic job as this whiny kind of young adult.
Life? Are you talking about Life as a House?
No, Shattered Glass. He plays, it's a true story based on a young journalist who makes up stories. And for, I can't remember the newspaper, or it was like the New Yorker or something like that. And so he would then have to take people and justify all these stories that he had done. And it's a great movie. I showed it in my journalism class when I taught journalism in high school.
Well, the reason I say that is because he plays a similar character in Life as a House. He plays a whiny teenager in Life as a House with Kevin Kline.
Yeah, so I can understand why he was cast as Anakin. I just wish that he hadn't been.
I personally think part of that was direction, because I've seen him play other roles before, and people joke on the first Star Wars about the types of direction George Lucas gives.
Faster, more emotion. No, not more emotion.
Faster, yeah. I'm fairly certain that if you would have had someone who actually took time with him on I think the Star Wars performances probably would have been better, because he has done some good work. So I think that's partially at Lucas's feet.
Oh, I think a lot of it goes to Lucas, but the casting there just it ended up not working for me. So, and then the kid, he's a child actor, you know, what can you say? But it's unfortunate.
Especially when you know that Haley Joel Osment auditioned for that role.
Yeah.
How different would it have been?
And I think that was the only movie he ever played in, right? I think he made that maybe one other movie and then he retired.
Yeah, if you would have had Haley Joel Osment, it would have been like, I see Sith.
Yeah. Or, I see dead people and they're glowing blue.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I've got one last question for us then, and then we've got some listener feedback about this some miscasting or surprise casting. So here's my question, guys. What is it about this casting news that gets these kind of reactions from fanboys? Even before a frame of film has been shot, costume hasn't even been designed yet.
Well, it's because it's one of the most beloved, most well-known characters out there, and it's just come off one of the most, probably the most famous incarnation of the same character. So it's kind of like, how do you replace Sean Connery as 007? Now, you don't have the years, but as far as right now, Christian Bale is at the peak of his character, of Batman. So they're like, well, who are you going to replace him with?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. This was a good one. Daniel Craig, when he got cast as 007, people didn't like him. He was blonde.
He was blonde, yeah.
Yep.
And that was enough for people to not like him.
Well, yeah, he usually plays bad guys, so he's a different type of Bond than what you've seen in the past.
Meanwhile, then, you also have, it was Timothy Dalton Pierce Brosnan especially, who was not surprised. I mean, that was like perfect casting. You just drop him in that movie. He embodies the James Bond ideal that wanting. At least you were wanting in the 80s and early 90s. Yeah. But then you're right. Daniel Craig, he's one of my favorite James Bonds. Although it's like saying, well, what's the worst Pixar movie? You know, they're all pretty good, except for maybe Cars.
You don't like Cars?
It didn't connect
Cars
with me.
Cars 2.
And I haven't seen Cars 2, so.
You don't like Cars 2?
I didn't like Cars either, so.
Wow.
It just didn't connect with me on the same level as a lot of the other ones. Just felt, I don't know. But we're not talking about Pixar movies. That's another conversation with hopefully a guest host. So, yeah, I think you're right, Dr. Jace, that this, you know, these are characters we have preconceived ideas about. Anakin Skywalker, how long have we built that character in our mind without knowing anything about him other than he killed your father? No, he is your father, and he fought Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, I don't think they could have cast a good Anakin that would have fit our preconceived idea.
I mean, as the boy?
As the adult. As the boy, well...
You know, it would be interesting, and we don't have time to do it right now, is to go back to that year that it came out. Look around for other actors of that age and look at the talent pool that was out there at the time and come up with some good options. I think that would be an interesting...
name actors now.
But that's the thing. It would be a little bit of research, a little bit of, you know, let's dig into it and try to find out.
Yeah. But yeah, with Batman, again, well, my thing with Wolverine, with Hugh Jackman, he didn't fit. He was not Wolverine.
Yeah.
But now I hear his voice when I read a Wolverine comic. So, you guys want to hear some Facebook feedback then about this topic?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh, I was wanting to hear Facebook feedback of Tom Holste, who was agreeing with me about Doctor Who, but oh well.
Well, we can get to that in just a moment, okay?
Okay.
About this topic here, Facebook said, Mickey Kitt said, when I first saw the little greenish guy they got to play in Star Wars, I was like, I don't know where they dug him up from, but he played a pretty good Jedi Master. So... That actually, though, think about that casting. They cast Frank Oz, Grover, to play the Jedi Master, the 900-year-old Jedi Master.
Originally, it was Jim Henson. But Jim Henson said, you need Frank Oz for this.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Frank Oz was the best choice there.
Oh, well, you couldn't imagine anybody else doing it.
No. No, not at all. But that's... I like that. In fact, I remember driving to the theater to see Empire Strikes Back as a kid and trying to remember Yoda's name from the commercial that I had seen about the movie. And all I could think of was Grover. I was like, what's his name? What's that green guy's name? It's Grover. It's Grover, right?
It's Yoda.
No, it's not Grover. I know it's not Grover. Okay. James.
Miss Piggy and Fozzie Bear combined.
James T. Murphy says Heath Ledger as the Joker wasn't on board at first, but after seeing it, loved it. My friend Bill Bell said, Chris Evans as both Human Torch and Captain America. It didn't dawn on me until my daughter pointed it out. Makes me rethink my love of the Captain. So Chris Evans as Captain America was soured, it sounds like, because of Chris Evans as Human Torch, maybe. But I think that's, again, proof. He did it so well that it didn't even dawn on you until your daughter pointed it out. Yeah. So. Daniel Butcher says, Michael Keaton as Batman. I remember a lot of pre-internet chatter about how Mr. Mom could never handle being a superhero, and he pulled it off very well. And I agree with that. I remember actually reading a newspaper article. It was one of those things that it's on paper. It's very large paper with small print that people might have actually seen pictures of in movies. But this newspaper had an article about, like, he couldn't do it because he was Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
Andrew Musser said Richard Dean Anderson as Stargate's Jack O'Neill. Trying to reconcile the man who played the gun-hating MacGyver with the character I only knew as Kurt Russell's hard-nosed soldier from the Stargate movie was difficult at first. The TV version of O'Neill turned out to be a much more humorous character than the movie version, which probably favored RDA's style, but also took some getting used to. Eventually I did, and Jack O'Neill turned out to be one of my favorite sci-fi TV characters in the end. And I agree with that. And I've had actually the reverse problem. I saw the Stargate movie first and agree that seeing MacGyver play O'Neill was hard. But now when I go back and watch the original movie, I can't see Kurt Russell playing that part. It's just, he's not O'Neill. Richard Dean Anderson is. Yeah. So, all right. Dr. Jace, you wanted your validation. Is that what you're asking for?
I do.
Let's see if we can get it for you. We had some feedback about some of our previous episodes. Michael Poteet said that the spoiler thing that I did was senseless. Michael Poteet says, fun discussion, guys, although I side with Steve on the spoiler debate. Ben's prohibition against discussing The Dark Knight Returns is senseless. especially in the context of this particular discussion. It's like having a podcast on great jazz age fiction and then forbidding discussion of The Great Gatsby because folks haven't read the book but want to see the new Leonardo DiCaprio movie. To you, Michael Petit, I say, sir, it's not senseless. I didn't say he couldn't talk about Dark Knight Returns. I was just asking him not to talk about the climax, the ending. But
which has been out for 30 years.
Michael Petit goes on to say, I am so sick of hearing that Superman is less interesting than Batman. I think you are closer to the mark, Ben, when you say, and you did, he is more of a writing challenge. But there's nothing boring about the themes of alienation, loss, exercising power responsibly, striving to maintain high ideals in a fallen world. Dr. Jace is also correct in pointing out that the whole issue goes away if you depower Superman some to a more reasonable level. Nowhere is it written that he must always and forever be nigh omnipotent. Whatever Superman does in that first animated short, the studio eventually asked National Comics if he could be allowed to fly because it was just easier to animate. The comics said yes, and soon he was flying on the printed page as well as on the screen. Read Glenn Weldon's outstanding new book on Superman for this and lots of other fun facts. Then he says, my son and I both enjoyed reading Speeding Bullets, an Elseworld book that has Kal-El landing in Gotham and being found by the Waynes. Very interesting premise and executed fairly well. So then Alan Rainey says, regarding the original Superman theatrical shorts, that's not flying, that's falling with style. Woody, 1995.
Nice.
Andrew Musser says, entertaining and informative as usual, guys. Many of your episodes introduced me to some interesting bit of sci-fi I'm not familiar with. This week, Astro City. Sounds like a really intriguing concept, and I'll be checking it out. Regarding Earl Grey Tea, the folks behind the Star Trek license, never once to miss a marketing opportunity, have actually licensed a Federation issue Earl Grey Tea. He gives the link on our... these are in comments from our website, StrangerAliens.com. He said, I also tried Earl Grey because of Picard's preference for it, but never developed a taste for it. And though feeling like I had failed some sort of geek test, reluctantly went back to my chamomile blend. And nice. He said it was also nice to see that Batman Brave and the Bold got a mention. And then corrected me on the pronunciation of his name, which is good because I mangle those.
Yep.
So let's see. Episode 80, Best and Worst TV Pilots. We had a comment on our website. Worst pilot for a reboot, 1995, Johnny Quest versus the Cyber Insects. This was designed to reintroduce Johnny Quest to a new generation prior to 1996's launch of The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest. If you've never seen this fetid plate of compost wrapped in a VHS cartridge of crud, we only need say it shows once again why you shouldn't mess around with a classic. It is a travesty of Lucasian proportions.
Nice.
Wow. Oh, man. Okay. So.
And, you know, just to get a little bit of a plug in there, the Johnny Quest was meant originally to be a version of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, old 1940s. Maybe even into the 1930s or 20s. It was a long time, just boys adventure type of stuff. And Johnny Quest was sort of meant to reinvent that wheel. That was not the way to reintroduce that character.
Okay, back to Tom's response.
Okay, so here's some Facebook comments on our best and worst TV pilots. That was from Alan Rainey, was from our website. This is from Facebook. Mickey Kitt talks about the new Lost in Space TV pilot didn't make it to the air. The producers for then coming Battlestar Galactica reboot bought the sets, though, for reuse, which that's pretty cool. Daniel Butcher says, I feel Dr. Jace is completely ignoring the finale of Newhart as he heaps praise on Star Trek Next Generation, which is possibly true.
But then again, we were talking mostly about sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
And I don't see how Newhart even remotely, even if you stretch it, fits that demographic.
Well,
it does.
It could. It could be fantasy because it's so absurd. But Thomas Holstey says, I'm going to have to back Dr. Jace on his choice of The 11th Hour. Head writer Stephen Moffat said the episode was deliberately designed as a way in for new viewers who had heard about Doctor Who but didn't have time to watch the first four seasons. In fact, both Moffat and the BBC referred to the 2010 season promotionally at the time as Series 1. And I agree with Jace that it is a much better jumping on point than Rose. While I liked Rose, Rose is the first episode in the entire new Doctor Who series with Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor. I like Rose a lot more than Jace does, 11th Hour is clearly superior. I saw that new pilot for Lost in Space on YouTube. Man, that thing might have been worse than the 1998 film, which is saying something. If you want to see another rotten pilot online, CBS's failed Justice League of America pilot is also on YouTube. I couldn't make it through 5 minutes of that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
As for Firefly, Ben, you mentioned that the pilot aired a few episodes in. In fact, it aired as the absolute episode broadcast on Fox after the series had been canceled. Could it have been more pointlessly placed?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty bad.
Personally, I thought that the Train Job was a much more boring episode than the intended pilot, because Train Job didn't root me in the characters that I cared about, so that I cared about what happened. In fact, the trailer over the summer used all clips from the actual pilot, including some very funny lines and a mystery, who is the girl in the box? Then I watched the episode, and there was no box. How confusing could Fox possibly make this? Incidentally, Fox did the exact same thing to Dollhouse, showed a bunch of cool scenes from the pilot and the trailer, and then eliminated them all from the aired episode. Good grief. Okay, so, Dr. Jace, one person out there did, in fact, agree with you enough to take the time to post on Facebook about it.
That the 11th Hour could be seen as a new pilot, with a whole new cast, with a whole new storyline.
If that's the case, though, you have to say that it's a new pilot for every new Doctor, then. Would you agree?
No, because when David Tennant, you have to understand, I came in not knowing anything about Doctor Who. So when David Tennant came on, Rose was already a part. So you had that relationship. When
yeah, but David so is River Tennant Song.
No, that's when you said River Song, that was the only one that I thought, well, I could see that argument. But it was a complete, everything else was a very different type of slant. And for me, it felt, even the shooting, the colors, the everything was different, and it felt like a brand new pilot. And that was my 2 cents. So.
And that is also Thomas Holstie's 2 cents. So that's 4 cents between the two of you, and that's better than ours, than my 2 cents anyway. It's double my 2 cents, I should say. Rachel Kessler from Geekily Yoked.
I have no sense.
She says, The Wonder Years was a great pilot, but on the subject of revisiting the 80s, wouldn't that be Freaks and Geeks? Also a really fantastic one-season show, but I honestly can't remember whether the pilot was particularly good.
No, I tried to watch it. I watched 3 episodes of it. Not even close to being a 90s Wonder Years. It was different. I didn't really care for it.
I liked it. Really, I remember different. Liking it. And on the subject of the Deep Space Nine pilot, she says, one of the best things about it, I feel, is how it slightly deconstructs Picard as the great hero. We see the ramifications of his time as Locutus on another Starfleet officer who naturally feels distrust toward this person we as the audience have been conditioned to see as unquestionably super awesome. It sets up Deep Space Nine as having a distinctly more complex interpersonal tone than some of the other series, which I'll confess is why I like it so much. So that's our listener feedback for the pilot episodes and for our Superman-Batman conversation, or rather our Batman conversation right now. So I don't know. Is there anything else you guys have to add here?
Nope.
No.
All right. Well, until my orcs meet up with Dr. Jace's trolls and goblins and Steve's wizards and warriors on the fantasy football on the fantasy football field.
I just have aliens and strangers. I don't know, wizards and warlocks.
I have Wolverines on my team.
Can you imagine? I was thinking about this. How cool would it be to figure out some way to do a fantasy football league that actually had like Wolverine on your team going up against, you know, Batman and
yeah,
you Spider-Man.
Basically, super fantasy characters in a football game. They should make something like that.
That would be really awesome.
Of course, the Superman team against Wolverine would crush them. So.
Yeah. But
it would be cool to see Wolverine throw the ball to himself and Wolverine catch the ball with his claws.
Yeah, yeah. Or to see, you know, Wolverine running past some hobbits on the sideline, you know, who are water boys. And, I mean, there's just some awesomeness to the idea of fantasy football. That's all. We'll see how actual fantasy football, how awesome that is for me. All right, well, I think we should sign off, guys. What do you guys think?
It's been a long show.
Not really. It's about average.
For us? All right. I'll let you have it.
All right. Well, until next time, everyone, Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.
This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network. For more great content and community, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.